All right, good afternoon, everyone. We want to talk about this very important theme that we call exile and exodus. All right, the human story of redemption. Of course, the entire Bible talks about the gospel, right? But how we talk about this gospel story can be approached through various different themes laid out in the Bible. You know, how we often use this terminology that when someone who's a believer has gone home to be with the Lord, right? We often say, you know, that person has gone home to be with the Lord. How did we come to that point or that understanding that heaven is our home? And what does it mean for us to go home, right? Likewise, it's often our common wording when we say that when we talk about our actual home, you know, the home that we live in today is a home of security. You know, when we are surrounded by people, our family members that we like, we love and trust these people. And so home gives us a sense of security and a sense of belonging. Right, so we all have some idea of what that means, all right, to be at home, or that when we go home one day. Now, just imagine to yourself right now that certain people, some people are actually forced to leave home and live in a foreign land. Now, we actually have a sort of a global crisis right now where in Ukraine, we've had millions of Ukrainians forced out of their home because of the war there, and they have migrated as refugees to various different parts of the world, all right, because they're actually forced out by the conflict in that part of the world. Now, we don't call that exile, but we call that fleeing, you know, deportation or what. But and so we have that kind of a catastrophic event. You can call this exile. You can call this, you know, as some kind of a forced leaving of one's homeland. You know, we also use the word, let's say, immigration, you know. And when one group of people is, let's say, forced to leave, and that means they're put in exile, they're confronted with the unknown, and they can often feel quite disoriented. Culture shock with a lot of uncertainties, and is a very unsettling feeling. Questions that they bring up would be, well, how did we, you know, end up leaving our homeland, and are we ever going to go home again? Right. These are just some of the things that the Bible actually talks about, and they are. This is a very important connecting theme, which is laid out throughout the Bible. The entire Bible actually addresses these two important questions. How do we end up in this foreign land? And is there hope of ever going home again? Right? You know, so this is something I want to talk to us about today. And in the Bible, the terms exile and exodus, all right, refer primarily to two very important historical events in the life of the nation of Israel. First, what we call the Assyrian and the Babylonian deportations. They were actually, the nation of Israel were actually deported, held captive, and taken into foreign lands by force. That's what we call exile. And then they eventually would go back to their homeland. This is called Exodus, all right? Now, these two terms, put in more general theological terms, actually have a wider meaning than just exile and Exodus. The word exile refers to a broken relationship between God and his people. So even though the Assyrians and the Babylonians strong arm, you know, the children of Israel and exile them to their, you know, to their land. Actually, we know that exile was actually allowed, and it was really by God's choice that these people were exiled. And it refers to a broken relationship between God and his people. And then the word Exodus refers to a promise of restoration. So when the children of Israel, you can say they were exiled from the promised land, and they were put in Egypt, all right? Even though that's not the official, exile. But then we also know the book of Exodus is called the Exodus because it's a reference to the fact that they were called by God to return to go back to the promised land, all right? To go to the promised land. And so these are important things. So Israel's story of exile and Exodus, reflects the story of humanity. They're actually an image of what we all go through in our spiritual pilgrimage, a story that begins with all the way back to Genesis chapter 3, the expulsion or the banishment of Adam and Eve from garden, from Eden. And we will not actually go back to the so-called promised land, to our home. And this will not be resolved until the resurrection of Jesus and his second coming. Right? So we, in a sense, we have been banished from our promised land. And the Old Testament is actually a picture, a story of what actually happens in all of humanity. All right, so we begin this afternoon and talk a little bit about the actual events of exile and Exodus. All right, so we know that in Genesis 1 to 2, Adam and Eve, all of humanity represented by Adam and Eve, lived in the garden. And that was paradise. But they lived there with one condition from God. There was a condition for them to live in paradise. And the condition was quite clear that they must trust God and follow God's one command. Right? There was a condition. Of course, they failed. They ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and they were banished from Eden. All right? So there was a sense of exile. They were pushed away, expelled from the garden. And so why is this story, put into the Bible, other than the fact that it's in Genesis chapter 3, is because it's important for us to see that this story was designed to set the reader up to understand Israel's story. Right. I mean, now we're going to the nation of Israel that will eventually emerge from Genesis, starting from Genesis chapter 12, the call of Abraham, and he will become the father of a great nation. All right. So this is the first 11 chapters or so is a setup to the salvation story, starting with Abraham and the nation of Israel. So the Israelites, likewise, were given the gift of the promised land. Okay. They were called by God. Abraham was called by God to leave his homeland and to travel to, Canaan, the promised land, and he would be doing this. And, likewise, later on, Moses would lead them into the promised land. And they were allowed to live in that promised land, the land of milk and honey, a great place. There, they were also given one condition for them to remain there. They have to be faithful to the terms of their covenant relationship with God. This is what we call the Mosaic Law. When God, called Moses to emancipate them from Egypt, from that bondage, and they went on an exodus. When they came to Mount Sinai, God gave to them the laws by which they must live in order to be their people, to be his people. But of course, they failed and then were sent into actual exile. They were actually banished from the promised land. So this is a continuing storyline in the entire Bible. So the story of exile actually continues in Genesis chapter 4 today. The topic of today's preaching by Reverend Edward, where Cain killed Abel, and God pronounces additional curses under which Cain must live. All right. So the main point of Genesis chapter 4 today, in today's message, is that, you know, sin has entered into the world in chapter 3. And now when you hit chapter 4, you see the escalation and the intensity and the consequences of that sin expand. All right. That's the main point of what's happening in Genesis chapter 4. So you see sin spreading, and you know, Cain then responds to God in today's message. Chapter 4, verse 14, you know, God pronounces curses upon Cain. Cain responds this way. He says, "Today you are driving me from the land." Right? You can say exile here. Driving me from the land. "And I will be hidden from your presence. I will be a restless wanderer on the earth." He was kicked out and he was wandering through the land. And whoever finds me will kill me. All right. That's how terrible the consequence of sin is. All right. Number one, he's driven out of the land, exile, literally, physically. He is hidden from God's presence. That's another consequence. He is now a restless wanderer on the earth. You know, this is what the Chinese term for Israel, for the Jews, you know, means. They are a wandering people, nomadic people. And then the final consequence is that, and whoever finds this guy Cain will want to kill him. There's a bounty on his name now, all right? So that's what's going on. As a result of this murder that Cain committed, he experienced a new level of alienation from God. This is the consequence of sin. That goes back to their father and mother, you know? And it's not just the murder that is really bad, you know, but the greater consequence is a life entirely hidden from God's face, and he became a restless wanderer. So this is the theme of exile and wandering, okay? Just like the Jews, this is a picture to what the Jews will do. They're wanderers, and they're nomadic now, all right? And so the story of humanity's deepening alienation from God is repeated in the accounts of Lamech. You know, we also talked about today, in today's passage, the first so-called polygamous, right? Multiple marriages, you know, multiple women. This is how sin is spreading and deepening. And then by the time you come to Genesis 6 to 8, you have a universal flood. Basically, God is so displeased with what's happening in the world, he decided to wipe everything out with a flood, saving only one family and a number of animals, right? But then by the time you come to Genesis 11, this theme of the spreading of sin, the expansion of sin and alienation from God, you find the Tower of Babel, you know, in Genesis 11, 1 to 9. There are people who are trying to build a name for themselves. They want to be like God. They want to be God. And this is hubris at its, you know, ultimate expression, right? So this is where sin is going and how sin is manifested in the first 11 chapters of Genesis. The deepening of sin and the deepening of alienation from God. Right? That's what the first 11 chapters of Genesis is all about. So what you see here, and this is a very important point now that I want you to get, is there's a very clear and strong parallel between the exile of Adam and Eve from the garden. They were banished from the garden, and exile and Israel's exile from the promised land, okay, which will happen only in the book of Exodus. Okay, Adam and Eve's exile from the garden and Israel's exile from the promised land. There is a very, very strong parallel. All right, I'll come to that in a second. Because what happens in Genesis chapter 8, humanity's exile from Eden led up to the building of the city of Babel, or the Tower of Babel. Why is this a connection? Why are they parallel accounts? It's because we know Babel is where, where today, today's Babylon is the city of Iraq, right? And this is where the Israelites will be sent in their exile into Babylon. Okay? So you understand the connection now. Okay? Adam and Eve's exile from Egypt led to the building of the Tower of Babel, which is today's, which is the Bible's time Babylon, which is our today's city of Iraq. Okay? That's a connection. It's not a mistake. So in Genesis chapter 12, therefore, Genesis 8 is a very important point to make, in the sense that, you know, not only people have they built an actual tower of called Babel, but it's a city where it will become Babylon, right? So that's the point. And then Babylon is today's Iraq. And the children of Israel will be sent to Babylon for their captivity, their exile. So in Genesis chapter 12, here we begin to see the restoration process, okay, that God will give to all of us. Remember, the broader theme of Exodus is called restoration. Exile means a broken relationship with God, rebellion against God, and then we have to face the consequences of sin. So it's no wonder that in Genesis 12, you have the first Exodus theme played out, whereby God asked Abraham to leave and travel to the promised land. That's Exodus, all right? It's a part of the beginning of the restoration process. That story was designed to give hope to the eventual nation of Israel living in the later Babylon, the actual Babylon, not just the Tower of Babel. But eventually they will leave and exile, go through their exodus from Babylon as well, right? But in, we will see that look at the first exile and the first exodus in the Bible, right? The Lord had already warned Abraham in Genesis 15:13 of trouble to come, right? By that time, they're not in, they don't know about exile yet. The Lord said to Abraham, or Abram, "Know for certain that for 400 years your descendants will be strangers in a country not of their own, that they will be enslaved and mistreated," referring to their Egyptian captivity. I mean, they were enslaved, right? Even though there was not a so-called technical exile there. Thus, Israel's time of bondage in Egypt was their first exile. And their emancipation was their first exodus, at least in the historical chronological sense. Right? So we know that later biblical prophets, writers, speak of Israel's forced captivity in Assyria and Babylon as a so-called return to Egypt. Right? This is how Egypt is pictured, in the Bible as an image, which leads to a future regathering of a second exodus that will come later on. Okay, so I'll show you what I mean by that. So during Moses' time, he had warned Israel that if they did not, you know, turn away from idolatry, the nation of Israel would eventually be uprooted from the land, the promised land, and be scattered all over the earth. This is the warning from Exodus, from Moses himself, right? And of course, you know, by the time you come to 722, 586 BC, respectively, Israel's northern and southern kingdoms suffered a second exile. Right? The Assyrian and the Babylonian exile, exilic captivity. While in Babylon, Israel's spiritual problem became clear. Here, of course, we know, humanly speaking, that these two terrible nations, these empires, the Assyrian and the Babylonian empires, captured them and deported them to their land and enslaved them, mistreated them. But of course, we know God allowed it. God, in fact, directed these terrible exiles. And the reason for why God allowed it is because it was to address a spiritual problem within them, within the nation of Israel, who were there. They were God's people, right? So then you have prophets like Daniel, Ezra, and Nehemiah recognize that it was their ancestors' disregard for the law of God that led them to their exile. They were responsible. God allowed these exiles, deportations to take place as a punishment for their sin of idolatry. So here, in response to Daniel's prayer, and in accordance with the prophecy of Jeremiah in Ezra 1:1, the Lord moved the heart of King Cyrus of Persia to make a proclamation, right, that some would return to Jerusalem and to rebuild the temple. So all these you know, foreign empires came in and just deported the children of Israel. They destroyed the temple in Israel, in Jerusalem. And here is good news that at least they would allow some to go back. Okay. And they would go back and to rebuild the temple. So this is what we call Exodus now, a return, a restoration. By the time we come to Nehemiah, the prophet basically spelled out the fact that Israel's second exodus, the first exodus was Egypt, right? Here, by the time they are going back, it didn't really gain much traction. Exodus seemed to have stalled, right? Although the temple and the city's walls had been rebuilt, and a remnant of God's people returned to the land, the so-called regathering was still fairly small. I mean, not all of them have come back, you know. They were still under the bondage of foreign invaders. So upon returning back home now to the promised land, to Jerusalem, oppressive empires were still ruling over them, and people kept living in corrupt ways. This, again, is a consequence of sin, of idolatry, worshiping foreign gods. And so therefore, the prophets said exile was not over, even though some of them were back home in Jerusalem, but they're not, exile is still not over. It's not completely done yet, all right? How could they think they were still in exile when they were at home, right? Because they were still subjugated to oppressive empires. So in the Old Testament, Israel's Babylonian exile became an image of something more universal. The feeling of alienation and longing for something more, you know. So we all know that throughout the Bible, this term Babylon is not just referring to a place, the Tower of Babel, the actual empire, the Babylonian Empire, or today's Iraq, but we know that throughout the Bible, Babylon is a picture or an image of terrible suffering. So, for example, if you go to the book of Revelation, chapter 17, in verse 5, it says, and this is going into to the future now, on a apocalyptic symbolic language. It says, and on their forehead, a name was written, a mystery, Babylon, the great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. So this is both literal and symbolic for evil, Babylon, right? And so whenever we face our Babylonian exilic, journeys, it means that God is placing judgment on us. We have been expelled, from our home due to a broken relationship with Him. And Babylon is a symbol for evil and wickedness, a feeling of alienation and longing for something more. Right? So in the entire Bible, exile is the human condition. We are all longing for a better home. Right? So I hope you know where I'm going now. Right? This is all depicted throughout the Bible. So by the time you come to, let's say, the New Testament now, the Old Testament obviously held out the hope that one day God would send a king to rescue the world for all the Babylonian captivities that we have created. In other words, we have all been exiled from our homeland, figuratively speaking, spiritually speaking, right? We are living, we're not living in our home. We are in exile. The earth is not our place. Just as Revelation 17 says, 17:5, right? Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. Okay. That's where we are. That's where we are. And we will be moving to our eventual promised land. Okay. So in Jesus, where God, you go back to Jeremiah, you go back to Ezekiel, God would eventually give us the new covenant and give us a new heart. So even though the children of Israel failed in their covenant relationship with God, God would be faithful to his people by giving them a heart of flesh and not a heart of stone. And he would place his spirit within us. And that's how we can come to following him, because we have been given heart surgery. And this is all pointing now to the new covenant spelled out very clearly in the New Testament. So therefore, in Jesus, even though Jesus himself was in exile, he wandered about with no home. He was a Jew. And there he announced the kingdom of heaven, the home all of humanity was looking for, the kingdom of heaven. He said, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Actually, John the Baptist said that, but Jesus, of course, spoke of the kingdom of heaven, that we would eventually, that's where we would go. And so he went into exile alongside us. And he came into this world to show us a way home, right? He is trying to show us a way home. This is very clear now. This is what Jesus says in John 14, 1-6. Okay? Jesus is trying to prepare his disciples of his leaving from the earth. He was going to go to the cross and he would die. And he's trying to prepare his disciples for that terrible end. Of course, they didn't understand what he was talking about. This is what he says. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God. Believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I'm going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you're going. So how can we know the way? Jesus said, answer, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So Jesus came into this world. He went to the cross to die, and he rose again on the third day. And that all of us who place our faith in him, he becomes the way back home for us. So these are the connecting theological points in the entire Bible of what we call exile and exodus. Right? Jesus came to give us salvation, but ultimately that salvation meant that we who believe in him will be shown the way home, to our home. Right? And so this is what we call the new exodus now. Okay? You say, well, where in the Bible do you find this language of new exodus? I thought this was an Old Testament term. Well, no. The term exodus, is used actually three times in the New Testament. It's not just an Old Testament term, right? For example, in Luke 9:31, it says, they spoke about his departure, Jesus' departure. There is a word, exodus, okay? It's translated from the Greek, departure, his departure from this world, which he was about to bring to fulfillment at Jerusalem. This once in Luke 9:31, and then in Hebrews 11:22, by faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions about concerning the burial of his bones. Again, exodus is spoken of. And speaking about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt, as terminology for faith, salvation faith in Jesus Christ in the New Testament. And then 2 Peter 1:15, and I will make every effort to see that after my departure, there's the word again, you will always be able to remember these things. There's that word for departure, exodus, okay? His departure. We'll always remember these things. All right, so these are the three instances where you have in the New Testament the literary semantics, the literary word, exodus. So not just an Old Testament idea. So we want to understand how the New Testament connects with the Old, right? And here, in very, very strong wording, what this all means to us is that by following Jesus, Christians would discover a new way of living in a pagan society. After all, we are not at home yet. Okay, dear friends, I want to remind all of us, we are living in exile right now. The world is not our home. Just as the nation of Israel, they were wanderers, Yao Tai Yan. You know, we call it, these are wanderers, they're nomadic people. You know, they're scattered all over because of their broken relationship with God, and they have been called by God to go to the promised land where they will regather, okay? And so it's no wonder when you come to a book like a letter like 1 Peter 1:1, it says, I, Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who reside as aliens. Okay. Now Christians are called aliens, foreigners, scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia, who are chosen. Okay. So there is the word alien or foreigners. I'm a foreigner to the land of Singapore. So I know what that feels like. Okay. I am sort of like a wanderer, a migrant worker, right? So, and that's how the Bible speaks of Christians, to remind us of our identity, living in a very different society than we are accustomed to. Right? This is what Peter 1:11 says. He says, dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles, there is a word exile, right? to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. So you see how these not only terms, but these concepts of exile and exodus connect the Old Testament and the New. Just as the nation of Israel was called by God to, you know, to enter into the promised land, Exodus. But by entering, they must fulfill and maintain faithful to the covenant relationship with God. But when they failed, they were exiled to foreign lands. We are like that in many ways, right? So meanwhile, the world is not our home. We are strangers on this earth, as it were, in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 13. We are strangers on this earth. Then he says in verse 16a, longing for a better country, a heavenly one. That's where we are going. So heaven becomes our promised land. Okay? That's what Paul says in Philippians 3:20. Our citizenship is in heaven. Okay? We are ultimately not citizens of this world. Our citizenship, our identity, our home is in heaven. And so how we live in this world is, you know, we must do our part, you know, to be responsible citizens of the country to which we belong. But knowing the fact that we are never going to be identified with the value system and the practices and the patterns of this world. This is not our home, right? And so what the New Testament is saying throughout the theme of exile and exodus is that we remain exiles and we wait for that day when Jesus would return and transform this world into a true home for us. So that's what we are looking forward to. We are on our way home. We're not there yet, dear friends. We need to be patient. We need to learn to be good citizens of the world in which we live. But at the same time, we must abstain from all the evil desires, all the values which wage war against your soul and my soul. So there's always going to be tension for us as Christians who live as foreigners, as wanderers, just as the Jewish people were Yotayan, you know, they're wanderers. Therefore, God is not ashamed, the writer of Hebrews says, therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. God has prepared a city for us, a country for all of us. And that's what we are longing for. All right, so we end here. And my sharing with you today is, I think, more devotional today in a sense that, you know, I sometimes, maybe it's because I am truly not, I am actually away from home. I don't even know where home is anymore. You see, this is my sharing, you know, because whenever people ask, so where are you from, Clive? I say, well, depends on what you mean. My birthplace is Hong Kong. I don't belong in Hong Kong. I'm still a citizen of Hong Kong. I still have my ID in Hong Kong. And in many ways, that's where my comfort place is. But my citizenship is in the U.S. as well, and that's where my family is. My wife is American. And so when they ask, where am I from, I don't know how to answer them. Where is my home? And eventually when I retire, I'm not sure where I'm going, you know, where I will reside. Likely it will be in the U.S., but if I had it my way, I would prefer to stay in Asia, you know, and actually retire here. And one day I would rise, you know, from Asia to meet the Lord, to meet with the Lord, you know. So I don't know where my home is anymore, except to say that, you know, My home is really not anywhere in the world. My ultimate home is in heaven. And that's where my citizenship is. Even though I carry three different passports, I have a Hong Kong passport, I have a UK passport, as well as an American passport. And so, and this is how confusing it is for me, you know. In a sense, I have a sense of the fact that I am truly a wanderer, an alien, a sojourner, a stranger in this world. And to be a Christian worker, we are, you know, wandering through this world. I don't have a so-called place where I can call my home, you know. And so I would imagine that some of you, you know, may feel that way too, because ultimately we cannot identify with this world. This world is not our home. And we long for a better country. And that's what should be our sight, you know, because we've been dislodged from our home. We are going through a journey now, a pilgrimage, returning to our homeland. And the Bible says Jesus has gone ahead to prepare a place for us, a room for us. And that's where he is, and he will come back for us. And that's great promise, you know. Especially for some of us who are getting a little bit older, we will eventually pass on. And this passing on must not be perceived or interpreted as something negative. In that sense, when we are promoted, we will be going home. And that's something that we should look forward to. And so, you know, sometimes I lie in bed and I feel like, you know, oh, this world, I'm not sure. It just feels a bit empty. I feel alienated. I don't belong in this world because my values and my practices and my beliefs are quite different than what the world stands for. I'm not part of the world system. So I don't feel like a natural fit here in Singapore. And certainly if I go back to the U.S., I would feel very alienated there with all the violence and the racial, you know, tension. And then if you go to Hong Kong, you know, it used to be a nice place, but now it's under a different rule, you know, and there's also a lot of problems there. So I don't feel like I fit anywhere. And you know what, dear friends, that's okay, because our citizenship is in heaven. And that's where we are moving toward and where we are going. And this theme of exile and exodus then becomes very meaningful to us in terms of what salvation is about. It's not just saying, okay, I will die one day and I will be with the Lord. It's actually going home. And that's very, very comforting for us.